Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins along with Chris Novembrino. And Chris, I have warned you about this, but I have been watching old Freebirds videos because I have a bunch of DVDs that's a compilation of them. And my two things, I'll start with the good in terms of I watched one good thing. I watched how they debuted in Memphis, and they debuted them. They gave them a promo up top, brought him back in the second hour, and it was like a 30 to 30-ish minute match against Jerry Lawler and Bill Dundee, the two top baby faces in the territory, where they got a clean pin, and it was time limit remaining. So it ended up 1-1 fall, and of course beat down afterwards. So, you know, you get the 50-50, but you also get a clean pin over the top two baby faces in the territory. I thought that was really good, but I did see something that has shaken the foundations of my old school fandom. Georgia Championship Wrestling, another thing that I'm trying to catch up on in terms of my fandom. Memphis, Georgia, and Continental are things I'm watching old stuff of because I've been told it was great, etc. But it's the Freebirds against Ted DiBiase and Steve-O. And Terry Gordy pile drives Ted DiBiase on the concrete. And DiBiase makes it into rolls into the ring barely by the 10 count. Gordy gives him another pile driver. 1, 2, kick out. Gordy picks him up, gives him another pile driver. 1, 2, kick out at 2.9. And then Tommy Rich comes in and throws in the towel so that there's no more of that. So at least they kind of protected the pile driver. But at the same time, I'm just like, my God, he was training with the Blackpool Combat Club and he moved his neck. All those things I say about, you know, it used to be that a pile driver would put you out for months, dead, because Georgia killed it.
Kicking out, multiple kickouts on a pile driver is pretty egregious.
I thought that was too, but I also remember, you know, I think DiBiase was the top babyface in Georgia. They were trying to build him to be as such, so I get it. And they weren't exactly powerful kickouts, but still, I just went, oh man, now I gotta issue a mea culpa on my show because not everybody protected the pile driver as much as other territories did. I just went, there's one I'm going to have to eat it on. But yeah, top news story coming out today, an article in Bloomberg. The asking price for WWE has been leaked in a report today. The outlet, this is an aggregator, so they're reading from Bloomberg. The outlet reports that McMahon wants to sell for as much as $9 billion. And offers have already been made. Bloomberg noted that the asking price is 37% greater than the $6.5 million market value of the company. It is believed that UFC's parent company, Endeavor Group Holdings, Inc., and the Saudi Arabia government would be the most interested, but Endeavor would need help from a third party because, as Bloomberg noted, its market capitalization of $10.4 billion is only a bit more than what McMahon wants. First of all, give me your initial thoughts on that, because I have a theory.
You said the number was $10
billion? $9 billion is the asking price, as much as. So whatever.
It's fun. No, because that's you didn't tell me what the number was before the show, and in my head, that's, you're like, it's a really high number. It's going to be inordinate. and in my head, I was like, oh, he's got to be asking $10 billion.
Oh really? Okay, so you thought it was even more than it was.
Yes. No. That's
what they're saying is, I believe Endeavor's market capitalization is $10.4 billion, and that's only a bit more than what McMahon wants for his company.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, if we're reasonably valuing this company, it's under $2 billion in actual value, right?
$6.5 million.
Is how much we think
is the market value of the company.
Wow.
Or wait a second. No, it's $6.5 billion. My fault. I think.
Yeah, I was really.
Well, the quote.
You're hurting my brain with like.
Well, no,
like,
it's funny because the aggregator I got this from actually made a misspelling in their article, which means I'm never going to those guys again. But it says the asking price is 37% greater than the $6.5 million. I was like, okay, that's bad math right there. But I'll keep reading. So yeah, no, $6.5 billion is the market value.
That even feels high.
I agree. I think there's some funny math going on in there.
Yeah. $6.5 billion feels, because I mean, why would this company be worth that much more than about a decade ago when the stock price was about the same? Like, because they had their first like really big run like in like 2013, 2014, and at that point the company was only worth like what, $1.5 billion? So I'm just having a hard time getting my brain around this company appreciating in
TV
value.
TV rights and probable upselling of how much those might be worth in the next negotiations, plus the Saudi Arabia deal.
That's a lot of value added.
Can I give you another theory?
Sure.
And this is my most cynical theory of it, is that Vince McMahon was took back power to facilitate a sale of the company, and then he decided to make a price so high nobody's going to be willing to pay it. So he can just, in the meantime, take back power while he's in there saying, no, I'm trying to have a sale. How much do you want for it? $100 million. well, nobody's going to pay that. Yeah, but I'm here to facilitate a sale. You know, that kind of thing. Kind of thing where it's like he doesn't really want to sell the company. So he'll put a price so high that he doesn't think anybody will take it. People do this with real estate all the time.
No, totally.
They try and screw the market by asking for something so ridiculous. This happened in my parents' neighborhood, and then somebody actually bought it. And so the next day, every single other house for sale in the neighborhood went up by about $300,000. And you're just like, that is insane.
I mean, yeah.
If somebody pays it, it's a value. It's what they're willing to pay for it. It's a correct price.
It seems to me that he's almost pricing this to sell it to a government, like the government of Saudi Arabia.
But that's not exactly true. It's a fund that has some backing by people within the government or like the royal family. But it's the fund that owns the LIV golf league. The competitor for the PGA. It's not really the actual, you know, it's not like head of booking is going to get like a cabinet position in the Saudi Arabian government or something.
That would be amazing if MBS wanted to become the latest fail son to book a wrestling promotion. That would be amazing.
Let's do an angle involving a journalist. No, that's not. What are you talking about? No,
horrible things happen to Dave Meltzer at the end of the
It's government adjacent when they say these things. Of course, I picked one of the worst aggregators ever to do it, and I should have just gone to Bloomberg. I will do better in the future, people.
But that's what you get for going to scoopsnews.com.org.
I think it was like wrestlingnews.co, which has actually had a decent track record of late. So, yeah. I can see, you know, meeting of the royal family. And especially given the first crown jewel. Let's book Yokozuna versus the Ultimate Warrior.
Right, yeah, like MBS is like initial things is, well, can we get Yokozuna? Well, no, sir, he's not with us anymore. Can we get someone who looks like Yokozuna and put him out there as Yokozuna?
Get me almost.
Yeah.
Jerry Jarrett, Jeff Jarrett's father, passed away. One of the key figures during the territory days, as both a performer and especially as a booker. For modern day fans, I think his importance is interesting in terms of being one of the guys behind the original NWA TNA when they were in the pay-per-view weekly mode. But also a little bit of trivia for those who may not know this. It seems to be fairly well known, but some people aren't necessarily Wrestling Observer subscribers, etc. Is that when Vince McMahon had his steroid trial in 1993, if he had gone to prison, the guy who would have been in charge of WWF at that time would have been Jerry Jarrett.
I've always found that to be one of the most fascinating footnotes in like Jarrett's life, just because it's like, it's wild that Vince was legitimately considering Jerry Jarrett to be the guy who was going to be the caretaker.
I think it makes sense though. And here's why it makes sense is, and after, you know, look, my knowledge in Memphis is not, bone deep necessarily, but I've been watching a lot more of it. Jerry Jarrett loved, he had a plaque in his office that said, personal issues draw money. He was big into the soap opera aspects of storytelling in wrestling many times, and mostly involving his family members too. So if he wanted to like script the McMahon family doing things, he could do that. But it made sense to me as the more I watch Memphis wrestling, which even in Dave's obituary today or that came out in the Observer, he says this: Tennessee wrestling was considered low rent with the idea it was less sports-like. Jarrett himself felt that Eddie Graham's Championship Wrestling of Florida and Vern Gagne's AWA to him were boring television shows. Jerry Jarrett was big into the melodrama of wrestling, so it makes sense.
He viewed it as a television show, which yes. I think in that sense makes him very much simpatico with the general motif of our show.
Yeah, I will give a little bit of a background, read a few paragraphs that I've selected from the obituary, because I think it's a very solid obituary, and the more I read about it, the more I want to get to know this guy a little bit more in terms of things I don't know. He's one of the key figures in the history of Tennessee wrestling, first as a babyface wrestler, then as a booker for Nick Gulas and Roy Welch, where he turned Memphis into the best drawing weekly U.S. city for wrestling in the country for most of the period from 1971 through the late 80s. He then opened up his own company, Jarrett Promotions, competing with Gulas and Welch in 1977 when he took Jerry Lawler and announcers Lance Russell and Dave Brown as the key people for this promotion. That's another thing that I really have started to notice about Jarrett. And of course, everybody knew Lance Russell was great, but his whole thing was that announcers had to have credibility with the audience. They weren't going to be clowns on the show necessarily. Like if something happened to an announcer, it was like, you know, hitting your mother kind of a thing. You know, it's like, you don't dare touch Lance Russell, because they were both respected newsmen who came over and did wrestling for a living. Of more interest, Jarrett was also the booker for Georgia Championship Wrestling during the war with Ann Gunkel's All South Wrestling, hired by Jim Barnett when he was only 31 years old because of the reputation he had from booking Tennessee. He also briefly ran World Class in Dallas when he took it from a big money loser to profitable, and afterwards had a falling out with Kevin and Kerry Von Erich. They took back over, and the promotion failed shortly thereafter. And of course, he was also Vince McMahon's pick to run the WWF when Vince McMahon feared going to jail in 1993. He was soft-spoken, would talk slowly and carefully, and at times would hide how smart he really was. Many were lulled into the idea he wasn't the smart man in the room, which usually made him the smartest man in the room. I love that paragraph from Dave. I talked about what people, how people view Tennessee wrestling. Talking about the Andy Kaufman angle, as big as the Andy Kaufman angle was in 1977, they were working on one that would have dwarfed it. The idea was to do a Lawler versus Elvis Presley match. Presley was a big fan and they'd sell him as a threat because he had a karate background, with the idea of wrestling versus karate. Talks were ongoing when Presley suddenly passed away.
This would have been outstanding.
I think, if Elvis would have agreed to it, especially like Fat Man Karate, I'm here for this, man.
Yeah, no, I give me 1980 Elvis. Like,
doing, give me
like,
Elvis as Shinya Hashimoto.
Yes, exactly. I'm literally seeing Fat Elvis dressed up as Shinya Hashimoto right now, and I'm so here for this.
I don't. Now I'm angry we never got it, to be honest with you.
I mean, even Hashimoto doing a Fat Elvis gimmick would have been pretty legit.
Elvis with the Flag of Japan bandana.
Like, just him hitting Lawler with a kick and going like karate, like just like one time. Like, come on now.
Notable angles that he was responsible for. He established Rick Rude, who had been a preliminary wrestler in Mid-South. I watched some of that recently, as a legitimate main event draw with Lawler and others. The Road Warriors were also big draws there against the Fabulous Ones and Lawler and Austin Idol. Also notable, the Lawler versus Randy Savage feud in 1985 that culminated in a Loser Leaves Town match so that Savage could then go to the WWF. And of course, I watched one of the more famous angles he ever did involving his son, Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett was a referee in Memphis, and he was reffing a squash match involving Buddy Landell and superstar Bill Dundee, who then went on to just attack the ref. And then Jarrett made the save, and then later on came on, and he's like, I was told I shouldn't come on because I shouldn't cry, but they attacked my son. And, you know, it was the soap opera type stuff, but it was really, really effective for what professional wrestling was, and especially in that time when people still thought it was real. I think I've really started to grow on watching his product and just... I mean, we've watched certain things when we were doing the Lawler Kaufman stuff, and while you know Lawler kind of booked for half the year and Jared booked for half the year, we saw a lot of things like the First Family celebrations. I mean, they were big into those types of gimmick type things, and you could see how Mid-South and Jim Crockett Promotions and other places would kind of steal from those ideas as they brought talent who had been there before and reused some of that stuff. And it's really been kind of an influence on what modern day WWE is as well.
Yeah, it's funny, for as much of an arm length as Vince used to like to put between himself and Memphis wrestling, like not so, you know, you wouldn't have heard it so much in the last 15 years, but if you go and watch the stuff like Vince interviews from the 90s or the aughts, he does often, you know, whenever he talks about like older wrestling or whatever, he sort of poo-poos Memphis wrestling. But like,
does he? Because it's let me cut you off here just real quick. He says wrestling. He hates Southern wrestling. I don't know if he hates Memphis wrestling, because he let guys go there towards the end of the USWA's run, and that's the first place where the Mr. McMahon character debuted wearing a title belt. Even before he went into WWE to become a WWF to become an in-ring competitor, he debuted himself as kind of a performer who was there to troll Memphis and that kind of wrestling and stuff. I think he secretly liked it. I do too.
I think it's increasingly clear that like especially like the First Family celebration type stuff, Vince loved those type of angles, clearly.
Yeah.
And he liked doing them a lot with the corporation. And all the various iterations.
Yeah, he liked the camp. He liked the camp that Brian, he amped it up a little bit, I think.
Yeah, the Mr. McMahon character and basically most of the Mr. McMahon storylines are like, yes, hyper ramped up New Yorkified Memphis storylines.
Yeah, I would agree there. Go read Dave's obituary in this week's Observer, guys. It's really strong. And yeah, Dave sometimes gives the history of somebody from fetus until until death, but it's long and it's worth it, and it's very, very interesting stuff. In jurisprudence news, we had reported on this earlier, but U.S. District Court Judge Edward Davila of the Northern District of California in San Jose threw out MLW's antitrust lawsuit against the WWE and canceled the discovery process, noting it would be moot. But he did keep the case alive by allowing MLW to amend the suit within 21 days of the February 13th order. Davila wrote that MLW's complaints did not present strong enough evidence for antitrust allegations, and the court did not have the jurisdiction over the case if not for the Sherman Act claims. Davila also wrote that the complaint fell short and said that the allegation in the complaint must state a claim for relief that is plausible on its face, which apparently Davila believed the complaint didn't do. He ruled that the complaint didn't allow the court to draw a reasonable inference that the WWE was liable for MLW losing their two TV deals. Gary McDevitt is a G. He knows the rules, and he'll say correlation isn't causation, and Your Honor, we think you should dismiss this. Okay, click.
there are a number of different ways that they could have tackled this, but not the least of which is just showing that MLW is a pretty weak company anyways. So, like, yeah.
But
like,
you're not going to get antitrust because there are other wrestling companies out there.
Nope, exactly. And, like, a lot of antitrust laws are not particularly strong right now. So,
in a weak economy, you can't argue monopolies for the most part, too. Every time you think there's a window of hope, and then you just end up like Jesse Pinkman. He can't keep getting away with this. Yes, he can, and he will.
It will always be, you know, fascinating to me that, like, WWE's been able to essentially become a monopoly, but, like, we won't call them out. I think it's going back to the valuation of the company. Why is the company worth what it's worth? I think, you know, underneath the funny mat there, it's the fact that they're an effective monopoly, that they have complete industry dominance. So, like,
they are the brand. When you say pro wrestling, you say WWE still.
Right. Like, I mean,
they are Coca-Cola.
If you're like a venture capitalist firm or something, right? Like you would buy the number one, like the industry leader in sandals, and you wouldn't think twice about it. Like
Birkenstocks.
Right. No, I mean,
why, like, were you so quick on the sandals? I don't know. I don't wear them. Go ahead.
With WWE, they have the wrestling market cornered, and I guess we'll get into our ratings numbers here in a minute, but, like, it's not clear that anyone else has really figured out how to crack the nut even close to it.
No, you can't prove that they're liable for your injuries, and you can't prove that they're, I mean, McDevitt is just, and McDevitt has become a millionaire 10 times over because that's his client.
And I'll go one step further. Let's suppose that there was actual antitrust actions against WWE. I'm not entirely sure what that looks like or how that plays out, or if that even ends up in a more favorable market at the end of it.
Well,
I mean, I think it'd be right and good to label them as a monopoly. But I don't know, like, what then? Do you break them up like Ma Bell?
No, because they don't have subsidiaries necessarily. So you can't do that. They don't have, like, state WWE offices that you could then put in there. I think because they use their market leverage to keep small companies out, I think that's viewed as antitrust in many ways. But, you know, it's much like when I talked about, hey, you want to regulate pro wrestling. The people they're going to call in there are people who work for WWE. You know, that's the way this has always been, is that when a industry becomes so large and starts making so much that the government then feels the need to step in and regulate, for the most part. The government doesn't know anything about this business, so they'll call in the same people that they're trying to regulate, and they'll make a deal about them. It's with them, you know? Banks, the same thing happened. So, it's one of those things where you're just going to have to play ball. But we're going to talk a little bit about quote-unquote wrestling wars right now, because Tony Khan was on Dan Lebatard's podcast. I'm going to read a quote from him. I do know it's a real war between AEW and WWE. It's basically saying that they don't like each other beforehand, Tony Khan said, and the fans are interested in it. And that was part of the original business model of AEW, was I knew wrestling fans, frankly, are very interested in wrestling free agency and wrestling wars. And I believe we could create a free agent market that is definitely a real thing now. And that would be a big part of the story. I think wrestling fans, at the end of the day, that a lot of what happens in wrestling shows is sometimes story, and that's why people like watching the shows. They like stories and the exciting matches, and especially the combination of the two when the stories lead to exciting matches and vice versa. Now, what's interesting is the story that is the most real, the most intense, and the most hatred in all of pro wrestling is that between the two wrestling promotions, I think we truly, truly hate each other. And I think it makes for really exciting TV, and it makes for an exciting wrestling war. Chris, the floor is yours.
What? Dude, people, let's have real talk. This guy is high on his own bullshit. Just need to lay that out here. This is delusional stuff. This is deeply delusional stuff. They're not in a wrestling war. There is not a really exciting free agency pool right now. Or what is that? Sasha Banks, Mercedes Moné? Is that like what we're actually pointing to as the exciting free agent?
The rumor right now is that Kenny Omega might be looking to leave.
Cool. Really exciting. So we have Sasha Banks and Kenny Omega.
Pretty much.
Wow. Dynamic stuff. Okay. This is not the 1990s. This is not Diesel, you know, maybe Shawn Michaels leaving your company, maybe Bret Hart leaving your company, Razor Ramon, the 1-2-3 kid. Those were actual names. And I'm not saying that Sasha Banks and Omega aren't, but like you need a lot of names to make it an interesting roster war. A roster war can't just consist of like male talent and a female talent that both companies might want. That's not that exciting. Nor does it have any legs.
I think he overstates the amount that the wrestlers themselves hate WWE.
I mean, that's the other thing where I'm saying he's delusional. As I said, he's very much high on his own supply right now. There is not an animus towards AEW at all on WWE's broadcast. They actually will mention the company, not like necessarily by name, but like they're not omitting it all from history. It's certainly not with Cody Rhodes' storyline.
Not with Hunter in control, no.
No.
Vince, they will, but...
yeah, for sure. But, like, then let's go over to AEW side. Where is the anti-WWE animus? Is that supposed to be the Britt Baker fantastic storyline that's happening?
I think it's from former employees who have chosen to sign there. That they weren't used well enough. I'm thinking, you know, your Ruby Riots.
Right.
Your Tony Storms. Soraya's. They wouldn't let me back in the ring because of this. Maybe a little bit of Brian Danielson from, you know, they wouldn't let me go to my full potential type thing.
But that's not
Moxley
the company.
A bit.
That's not the company, right? Like, those are contractors for the company.
If you want to call them independent contractors, sure. Or you just need contractors for the company. Never mind. Sorry.
I'm saying, John Moxley is not a VP.
He has some position in there now.
With the new contract. Okay.
But they're not wearing shirts for the brand and saying, you know, it's not sports ball where they're rooting, you know, kind of, because they all have friends in the other company.
Right, and they don't want their friends to all be out of... That's the thing. What really keeps this from being a war is it's not like they're trying to wipe out the other company.
Exactly. If WWE wanted to wipe out AEW, they probably could.
But you'll never get to that.
I mean, people might kvetch at that because of, oh, well, look at the ratings that they get on Turner, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, okay, it's a great relationship. If WWE went to Turner and said, we can give you a show and double your ratings, they might jump at that, I think. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Especially if Vince came in there and lowballed what like that show was worth. And basically gave Turner an offer they couldn't refuse. No, like Vince, like this whole idea that Tony's like in this fight. No, you're not, dude. The guy on the other side of the ring is toying with you. Right now
he's the guy in the bar looking to show how tough he is by talking trash in the bar and wanting the big guy in the bar to slug him, and whereas the guy that WWE is probably going to be more worried about is the quiet guy who you don't know. And that's what's getting me about this. It's like, I get he wants to He wants to go out there and really market himself as the alternative. The problem is he's marketing himself as the alternative.
Not himself. Yeah, Tony Khan. Yeah, Tony Khan. It's a cult of Khan.
It's a cult of Khan versus, you know, I know MJF does media. I know some of the other guys do media. I would be sending all these guys out and trying to do media if this is what you really want. And it doesn't seem like it's a full-on blast, and it doesn't seem like a lot of people want to have professional wrestlers on because of the stigma. I get it. But this, yeah, this just seems, this is Eric Bischoff-esque to me.
You know, Bischoff, I felt like, had more fire trying to beat, like, Bischoff had more fire and competency trying to beat McMahon than Khan's exhibited at this point.
Oh, okay.
I
won't disagree with that necessarily. I just don't know.
I'm not
because he failed spectacularly afterwards and made moves that just prove that he couldn't hang once he started the fight, and that's what I'm afraid is going to happen to Khan here.
But like, here's the thing: Khan's never like gotten up and over on Vince. You know what I mean? Like
yes.
To analogize, like
it's all, oh, look at the demo from this. Oh, he
right,
won. Like,
right. I have not beaten up on the demo talk in about a year or whatever, but there's a reason why I was crapping all over that for months. Because it was a very stupid way.
They beat NXT. That's who they beat.
It's a very stupid way of looking at how this overall thing is going. It's so myopic.
Yeah.
Okay, we're doing great in the demo, but like they're missing the bigger picture, clearly. I mean, we've analogized this to like fights or whatever in both cases, like with Khan and Bischoff. Like with Khan, I feel like it's like Khan has been swinging at, you know, McMahon, the bigger guy at the bar, and the bigger guy at the bar has been toying with him and just hasn't knocked him out yet.
Yeah.
With Bischoff, bigger guy at the bar knew that he was ultimately going to prevail, but like Bischoff actually landed a lucky shot on this guy's jaw.
Oh, Bischoff hit him with a chair.
Yeah. Right, no, right. Yeah. Like actually like landed some lucky shots and made the big guy go, oh, okay, I actually have to take this a little more seriously and go nuclear on him. Khan hasn't, I guess what I'm saying is Khan hasn't even agitated the big guy to the point where he's felt the need to go nuclear on him. And yes. I think if that happened, this show would get like nuked from outer space.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like they are, yeah, it's like a smaller country picking a fight with a superpower, and they're just going, we haven't fired a nuke yet, guys. You're not beating us. Kind of a thing, and just waiting and waiting and waiting. It's like, it's big brother, little brother stuff. You know, it's like, I'm going to get in trouble with mom if I punch my younger brother because I know better, and I'm bigger than him and stronger than him. But damn it, he's annoying me right now. That kind of stuff. First ROH TV tapings are on February 25th and 26th in Orlando. New shows will be released every Thursday night on Honor Club. They will be taping both ROH and Dark with sessions on February 25th from 6 to 9 p.m., as well as February 26th from 1 to 4 p.m. and 7 to 10 p.m. More product. That's my thought.
Yeah, no, I think it's good. Clearly the numbers state that the demand is very high for more product. And we're getting it.
We'll get there in a second. I got a couple more stories to read. Fightful reporting, our friend Sean Ross Sapp, friend of the Jeff, friend of the show, reporting that there was a meeting last week backstage amongst the women to clear the air with Thunder Rosa and the rest of the women. That's interesting to me. I thought for sure Thunder Rosa was done with the company. But she, as we reported last week, was doing Spanish commentary for things. So it looks like she's going to look to make a return. She's trying to mend some fences. Also says to me that there might not be much demand outside of AEW. I'm going to say that out loud, much to the chagrin of some. But I will say it anyways.
I think
they come to Jesus meeting for Thunder Rosa.
Yeah, no, I think Thunder Rosa maybe has seen the act, like her market value. Look,
the road
Thunder
to
Rosa,
Damascus. I have
Thunder
seen
Rosa
the light.
Is not in the early phase of her career.
No.
No, I'm not going to be, you know, uncouth about it, but like go on Wikipedia, guys. She's not in the early phase of her career. So I don't see like a huge demand for her in WWE. I of course have been following her since she was in Lucha Underground as Cobra Moon. But I always believed in the Thunder Rosa character and thought that, you know, she should have been able to do more business. But it's been kind of clear that, like, she creates friction. I'm not sitting in the room. I can't see it all. But you see enough articles, you got to assume some of them are true.
I mean, yeah, and wrestling is a ego-driven business. And once you're getting a push, you want to stay on top and you want to be the champion and you want to be the face of the division and you want the marketing and stuff like that. So, you know, I mean, look, I am sympathetic to getting a taste of fame and then it bringing out the worst qualities in some people. It happens. And eventually they go, oh, yeah, well, maybe I should, you know, I got to work with all these people, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe I shouldn't be in this way or that way. And there are probably people in that locker room who also have big heads. I can pretty much guarantee it, be honest with you, because I know some of them. I will not say on the air who is who, but yeah, I think you can take this as cynical or you can take this as hey, you know what, maybe somebody really wanted to make amends, or I don't know who. I want to know who called the meeting, because if it was Tony, it was probably be like, okay, apologize, I'm sorry, you know, that kind of thing. But maybe it was Thunder asking Tony, hey, can I have a meeting and I want to clear some air. So it can go either way with me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing. Like, this division always needs
help,
talent. Yeah, it always needs help.
What, so, are you saying that spraying an L on your butt and running into somebody isn't the angle that you like?
Oh, it looked so good on television, Jeff. I don't know how you could sit here on a microphone with me on this Friday afternoon and sit here and tell me that wasn't World League shit.
Oh, my goodness. Finally, in the news department, before we get to numbers, Oni, the artist formerly known as Oni Lorcan and Biff Busick, is officially retired from in-ring competition. And is a trainer at the WWE Performance Center right now.
Cool.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to me because when he got signed, I was like, that's a guy that's just going to be used to put over other guys. And I think he outkicked his coverage for the WWE system, which, you know, he has a receding hairline. He's kind of skinny. But that tag team that he had with the former Martin Stone.
Yeah, Danny Burch. And Lorcan. Yeah, one and two.
Burch and Lorcan were great.
Yeah, they were
fun. I loved that team.
A lot of fun.
They were a lot of fun. And if you can help the young talent learn how to throw punches and forearms, I'm here for that. Because some of them need some work on that in between flips. Numbers. Here we go. AEW Dynamite, 824,000. One of the lowest numbers in a regular time slot for that show. Rating 0.27. NXT 640,000, 0.15. More or less consistent with what they've been doing. Raw 1.8 million, the 0.47. And SmackDown 2.468 million with a 0.64.
Wow. 2.4.
Oh, and Rampage 375,000.
Oof.
Oof. Sami Zayn story is working and it's good. Am I wrong, Chris? Do you pull the trigger and belt Sami then to see what you can get for a rating?
I think it's certainly an interesting move. Because there are a number of interesting off-ramp storylines with Sami Zayn as champion. You could have Kevin Owens steal the belt from him and become the heel champion, and then that sets up Cody Rhodes versus Kevin Owens.
You can find a way to split the belts and just give Sami the one belt, but
right, yeah. He beats Roman for the one or something like that, and even that's still good enough. I think it's twofold. One, people like this Bloodline storyline.
Yes.
It may or may not be Emmy award winning. But it's certainly for wrestling. One, wrestling never actually wins Emmys, even though WWE tries to submit themselves for them occasionally.
oh, dude!
They
had an upfront at a theater that I've done an improv show in once out here in LA, and I heard nobody showed up to that damn thing.
I mean, like it beggars belief that they'd actually think that. But like, this is a fun wrestling storyline where every character has clearly defined motives And I mean, like, even in places where it's a little bit ambiguous, like, what was Sammy's game in the Bloodline? Like, you know, like, what was he actually trying to do there? It's always felt a little bit, like, unclear. But, like,
I mean, SmackDown this week was a great piece of business.
Yeah.
I mean, we record this on Fridays, and we don't give it enough love as we should, because it's one of those things where it's late in the week and the whole week of wrestling has passed by then. But, you know, I just loved the little moment of Sammy being back by the trucks and meeting Jay.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Heyman promo was great. And the Monday Cody Sammy promo, I thought was absolutely fantastic.
I thought that was good stuff too. I enjoyed, although I'm not sure it was the right choice, Sammy's "I don't know if I can beat Roman Reigns" thing.
That was a little bit he goes, "I'm confident in myself, but I don't know because of, you know, I don't know if I liked the weakness in the character."
No, I felt like the pivot there obviously is he needs to solicit from Cody, "Will you have my back here?" And like that, you know, like just keep the rest, like keep this match one-on-one.
I kind of would rather see a little bit of bravado and say, "Hey, will you, not even will you watch my back, but will you keep your word? It'll be us at WrestleMania in the main event," type of a thing, where it's like almost looking ahead of, not really looking ahead of Roman, but also saying, "Hey, if I'm the champion, I get all the perks therein," type of a thing, and I get to main event with you. I want him to keep that kind of confidence that he could win, because, yeah, I get the underdog story, and I get the, "Well, gee, I just don't know," or whatever. It's like, if you have the confidence to hit him in the back with a chair and to take up while his relatives are in the ring surrounding you, you have a certain amount of confidence in your beliefs and what's right and whatever. And it was a note where I was just watching and going, I'm liking this. And I'm thinking Cody and Sammy are doing a great job here. And I think Cody's job was basically to talk up Sammy a little bit, which I think worked because Sammy is such a great actor with his face. But yeah, no, I agree with you in many ways.
But I mean, I don't think it's an accident that WWE's SmackDown is pulling in some of the highest ratings. Yeah, we're in Mania season, but they've got a great storyline right now, and it's doing good numbers on TV. And AEW show continues to struggle with many of the same problems we have talked about for the better part of a year.
Well, here's the thing, is the narrative coming out of at least Twitter and newsletter hosting podcasters is that, well, it was a weak card with weak wrestling on it. And I'm just like, that's not the problem.
That's not the only problem.
That's not the only problem.
No, I mean, the biggest problem to me continues to be that storylines do not effing progress. That Wardlow and Samoa Joe are actually on the cusp of having a 6-month feud that has been absolutely cold. Yes. That the Ass Boys and the Acclaimed are doing yet another match. And in this case, just to like advance the plot, the Acclaimed are agreeing to do something incredibly stupid, which is
we're gonna add two more teams to this stupid match. Are you kidding me?
Like, I mean, the writing on this show is not very good. Sometimes there are well acted scenes, but they are sometimes next non sequitur, or in this case, the most common thing with AEW is just, man, it's the same thing over and over again. I can't wait for the next chapter of Ricky Starks and Action Andretti.
I don't even know if Action Andretti is ever going to show up again.
Is he gone? Yeah, dude.
We'll get to some of that. I gotta go over this Wardlow promo. I do.
It sucked.
With you. I do, but. Before we get to the rest of the Lazy River, we have a show preview because the Elimination Chamber is tomorrow, Chris.
Okay.
Montreal is a buzz. So let us talk. Let me speak on this, Odele. right now, 5-match card. Starting with big meaty men slapping meat, Bobby Lashley versus Brock Lesnar in what seems to be the 800th time they faced each other, but... yeah, my problem with the Bobby Lashley Brock Lesnar feud is that Bobby Lashley can't decide if he's a babyface or a heel. I gotta be honest with you, it's one of those weird things where it's like if he had just been Bobby Lashley, the whole time. It'd be great. But now he's hurt business Bobby Lashley. And it's like, okay, so we're kind of teasing that again.
Yeah, why couldn't they both just be like babyface monster guys who don't like each other?
Well, then the audience won't understand who they need to root for, Chris.
I mean, yeah, I know, but like this one on, like, honestly, I just want to see two guys beat the crap.
I just want to see ass kickers kicking ass. That's really what we want in this.
Especially because we've seen this, and oh, by the way, Lesnar and Lashley are not fantastic storytellers. So,
no.
Like, the less complicated you make the story, the better.
I have Brock Lesnar winning this and going on.
No,
Mania.
I don't. I have Lashley shenaniganing this.
Oh, you have Hurt Business stuff?
It's not like a dominant win, obviously, but I got Lashley shenaniganing this.
Is there a possible, because there's been a rumor of a possible call-up and adding Carmelo Hayes to the Hurt Business. Does that intrigue you at all? Doesn't me because the Hurt Business is a dead brand for the most part.
Yeah, no, it's unfortunate that they didn't do more with this concept when they could have.
And because
they'll
kill Carmelo Hayes,
he also already has a complete gimmick.
Yes, but
he doesn't need to be in a faction.
I agree. Mixed tag match, Edge and Beth Phoenix versus the Judgment Day of Finn Balor and Rhea Ripley with Damian Priest and my current favorite wrestler, Dominic Mysterio. My God, he dined. I sent you this. Did they show this on Raw? I don't think they did. Did they show this the Valentine's Day date on Raw?
No, they didn't show the Valentine's Day on Raw, no.
Dominic Mysterio shows up at the same restaurant where his mother and father are having dinner, runs him off, and then dines and dashes on Rhea Ripley. He is fantastic. I love him.
I love this character so much.
I do. You know what it's doing? It's teasing that he's actually Eddie's kid.
Yes, I know. I know. I like the more he embraces Eddie-isms.
Yes.
Yeah.
He needs to go. Yes. He needs roses and the hoopty. That's what he needs.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I'm totally here for a scene where he reveals to his dad that his dad is not actually his dad.
Oh yeah. That'd be 23andMe.
Yeah. Hey, sit down. Sit down, Pops. I got something to tell you. You're not my dad.
It says I'm 75% Latino heat. but really, let's also give a shout out to the WWE social media crew, because again, we're having this problem though that some of the best stuff they're doing is only for the internet. Because I also really liked, I don't know if you saw this, the Santos Escobar Rey Mysterio interaction after the four way, where Santos Escobar says, I mean, it's basically a face turn for him where he gives him his mask because we know how important this is, and he has such respect for him after that match and for Lucha, and then Ray gives him one of his masks type of a thing. I thought that was really well done by them, and damn if Santos Escobar isn't a damn rock star, and they need to push that guy to the effing moon.
For 10 years I have been saying this.
Yes.
You
are the man driving that bus, so I give to you.
Yeah, 10 years, man. I believe in this. I've always believed in this dude. He's got it. He just does. He's interesting.
The other matches, other than the main event, the two Elimination Chamber matches, the least of which for the WWE United States Championship, Austin Theory versus Johnny Gargano versus Bronson Reed versus Damian Priest versus Montez Ford versus Seth freaking Rollins, who once again is doing a terrible story that he can't find his way to WrestleMania. Chris, who you got?
I feel like Theory retains here.
I do too. I think that's the easiest call here, is that Theory withstands all this and then does a U.S. Open challenge and John Cena answers for Mania. I'm going to be very interested. Look, Damian Priest is awesome in these types of matches. Bronson Reed's probably going to do something amazing in terms of In terms of at least putting his body at risk, because they'll ask him to do that.
He looks great right now.
Like a jump from really the top of one of the pods, yeah, or running through one of the pods. He'll be established as a power guy. Gargano, I don't know what they're going to do with him. That's going to be very interesting to me, because it feels like he is ice cold right now, and I don't see him getting pins over any of these guys. And I'm very fascinated to see what they decide to do with Montez Ford. Now, I'll take it back. Bronson Reed's not going to be the guy to come off the top of a pod. It's going to be Montez Ford. But do they decide to book Montez in a way where they tease that they might break up the Street Profits again? I know we've been talking about this for 3 years, Chris, and it feels like they just stop, start with him. But is he going to get a pin over a guy in here? Not Bronson Reed, not Damian Priest. Can he get a pin over Rollins or Gargano?
I mean, yeah, I could definitely see him pinning Gargano for sure.
That's actually true. We'll see if he does the star build or not, but I still have Austin Theory coming out of this as the guy, even though I don't care about the U.S. title right now.
Yeah, I think he pins Rollins too for it, like just to really put a nail in the coffin in that storyline.
In the women's Elimination Chamber for a match for the WWE Raw Women's title, which, boy, that story with Becky and Bayley. And again, Becky, I'm looking for a way to get to WrestleMania. God, I want to be in the school play this year. I'm just like, what are we doing here with these two? Because look, I liked the triple threat match with Bayley and Becky, and they did some, they have such great chemistry against each other because they're so good, and they helped Bianca here. Don't get me wrong. But I was half expecting Becky to get into this or Bayley, and for this to be a nine woman type thing for the thing. So I have no idea what they're going to do with them for Mania other than the Legends, Lita and Trish versus Damage Control, etc. But whatever. I did not like that angle at all. But, and you can talk about it since I read this match, which I've been filibustering on. Asuka, psycho clown PTA mom, versus Liv Morgan, versus Nikki Cross, versus Raquel Rodriguez, versus Natalya, versus Carmella. There's some interesting possibilities in here, but I mean, look, I'm going to go chalk and say Asuka, but I could make a case where Liv Morgan figures out a way. I could make a case for Raquel, but I am under the impression that Raquel and Liv are going to be in whatever match is for the women's tag titles.
Yeah, I think they got Asuka, you know, on the path to WrestleMania right now. So I'm going to go Asuka.
She can't promo, but it doesn't matter because she has that psycho credibility, and whatever she does looks
there's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to get her over without her using her words.
I mean, and the thing is, no matter how many times they beat Asuka, everybody just thinks doom whenever her music hits. So, I mean, that's just a tribute to her. She's just awesome. That's my brother. My brother's coming to Asuka. So she wears a thong outside of her gear. I was like, yeah, Chris, that's sometimes how they dress the women. I don't know. And then the main event, Roman Reigns with Paul Heyman versus Sami Zayn for the Undisputed Universal Championship. Chris, I'm going to let you talk about this before I go into the prop bets that I think are going to happen here.
I know there is chatter this week about belting Sami Zayn, but we need to remember that we're thinking about WWE here.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to keep this belt on Roman Reigns.
Correct.
It's going to be a Montreal screwjob angle. That is going to be the story here. Sami is going to get screwed. I think he's going to get screwed. Like, and if they do this right, they screw him in a massive way so that that crowd is just booing the shit out of Roman Reigns at the end of it. Does it really set the table for WrestleMania? Maybe Cody even comes down and makes the save. But I think Sami needs to get screwed, and he needs to get like screwed really bad in front of the Montreal fans.
I think that it's going to happen. I mean, look, they love screwing with Montreal too. But it's not going to be the ringing the bell type of screw job, in my opinion. It's going to be Sammy's going to have Roman in the sharpshooter. Bret Hart call. Solo's going to come down and try and save him and be stopped by somebody. or you know, Jimmy's gonna try and save him, and then Jay's gonna come out supposedly to help Sammy ward off Solo and Jimmy, and he's gonna super kick Sammy.
Yep.
Spear 1, 2, 3. That's what I think is happening.
Yeah, no, Jay ultimately goes home.
And Kevin Owens eventually comes out to help in some ways. They reunite, big hug, big pop. Sammy loses, but the crowd goes home happy. I think, you know, and that's, people are saying, well, that's the most obvious way. Yeah, well, sometimes the most obvious way works. So I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious, but like, do we really think like the Montreal fans are going to boo getting an obvious story?
Nah,
boo,
just...
you're insulting our intelligence. Boo.
Hell, they may have Bret Hart try and come down and make the save and get stopped at some point. I mean, you know, lots of things could happen here.
Yeah, but you know, I think ultimately that's what happens, is that Sammy gets screwed. Jey Uso. I mean, I think the interesting move is to not have Uso, not have Jey lift a finger here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd like that his loyalty remains still in question leaving this.
But he doesn't help Sammy.
Right.
He gets destroyed.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That to me is the more interesting move. Okay. I can take that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the only thing, like, if I was going to do it any different, the only thing I'd do differently is not have Jey intercede. I'd have his status remaining question going into WrestleMania.
And now into the rest of the lazy river we go. I have been dipping in it all show because I'm talking old Freebird stuff. I'm talking old Memphis stuff. I've talked about things I've watched, but Chris, what's on your mind?
All right. Let's start in the land of NXT, the land of milk and honey.
Why?
Why not?
How about something you like first?
Okay. I enjoyed the Bloodline segments. But we already talked about those. Yeah. No, I mean, like, top line of Raw. I still find myself mostly fast forwarding through Raw. Like, we're back into the fast forward.
Yes.
Era.
I'm with you there.
Yeah. I there's nothing. I mean, why don't we talk more about Raw? Cause like, I'm powering through that show now. Watching NXT this week, which I did watch most of, Chance and Carter, I thought we were on the verge of turning them, and they came in and gave one of the most like heat sinking promos I've ever like heard, where they're like, hey, we just wanted to say before our match last week or this week that we got a little bit heated and we're really sorry about that. I was hoping that this was going to be a bait play for them to like go nuclear on Mako Satomura.
That's what I was thinking too. Okay, good. I'm not the only one who thought that it was disingenuous. It was disingenuous heels who were a little bit afraid of the partner that
right.
she called.
Right. No, no. I actually really liked that. Like the basically they didn't think Roxanne had a friend. Then their bluff got called, and now they're getting cold feet because they're kind of turning heel.
Yeah, because Mako's a killer.
Right, and they know that.
Gosh, she's awesome. By the way, I love Mako Satomura. Jeez.
She's righteous, dude. Yeah, she's great. And then I guess the other thing I want to talk about is the GG and JC thing, which like JC Jane will be a fine heel, I guess.
She had a terrible promo though. We gotta call him as we see him. I know we praised JC for her work in this team.
She's always been given crap material though, but this time
that
she
is,
couldn't rise
that
above
was
it.
Some crap material that they gave her for this. This is generic heel promo number 25 in the file or whatever.
How do you not have a personality carved out for this human? It's just, you know, she's just witchy is basically the only thing they've got in terms of like a character for her.
And shout out to Lance Storm for calling this out and being the first person I heard to call this out. Is who could care about JC turning on Gigi when both are heels? It doesn't make you a baby face just because a heel turns on you. In fact, it's karma. You should be cheering that kind of stuff. I mean, the times I've seen it work, like, again, bringing up Buddy Landell, but Buddy Landell turning on Butch Reed by selling him for a watch to Skandar Akbar, that worked for heel babyface sympathy because of the racial angle. And I don't think you would necessarily want to go there in that day and age.
Yeah. I don't think that that's the right move here. And I mean, the rest of this NXT show to me remained. This is not a good episode of NXT.
They might sell the bar.
Grayson Waller Ice cold now. Just being, I mean, after that heck of a title chase where he lost every match going into the title match and then lost the title match, now he loses to Tyler Bate this week. I'm like, dude, what are we doing? Why aren't we pushing Grayson?
I find the angle a cynical ratings ploy because they think putting HBK will help the numbers out here. And really what it's just going to do is make people want to see him wrestle. And I don't think he's wrestling. I think they may tease it. I think he may bring in a proxy.
Yeah.
But I don't see HBK versus Grayson Waller. Do you?
I don't either. Yeah. I think that's actually kind of an important part of one of these angles actually being credible is that you think that like you're going to get the veteran. Even if that ends up being like a bit of a bait and switch.
And even if they did, I don't know, you know, okay, WrestleMania weekend, NXT to sell tickets because they are in, I believe they're in Staples for it. HBK versus Grayson Waller. That might be the way to move tickets. I don't know, although I don't know if there is a takeover on Mania weekend. I think there might be.
That'd be a great, I mean, that'd be a nice way to move tickets. I was going to say that'd be a great match. I don't know about that. Yeah.
Okay. Nice, I had to rethink that because I don't even know. And it's a couple months away. I don't even know if there's a takeover for Mania or not.
And then the rest of the show kind of, you know, it's like, do I give a crap about the retcon of Apollo Crews and Dabba Kato? I was chuckling watching the, you know, his previous gimmick, the one with Commander As Is, being retconned to be this warm, familial, loving thing.
Yes, the general of my junta.
Yes. When I was briefly that African dictator, we were tight, buddy.
Didn't you remember the amount of death we did when we were in Africa running a country?
All those times in the death squads really meant nothing to you?
The people we had starving. Wasn't that fun?
We had all the resources and you just gave it away.
I want one of those. Hey, you remember when you were a African prince?
God. I'll finish out the show here. Axiom and Damon Kemp. Love Damon Kemp. Continue to really enjoy him. He's a great character. The problem with this show is not talent. They actually have a sneaky amount of talent. Love the Creeds. Love Damon Kemp. Axiom is a great talent and is actually a good promo. Terrible gimmick. This is like just an absolute garbage gimmick.
I love Thea Hale. Yeah. I do. Look, she can be annoying. I get, but that's the camp that they're having her play, but she's playing it to a T. I like Tiffany Stratton. I think her character is needed in wrestling, kind of a thing. And I actually kind of like the Von Wagner Rob Stone dynamic.
It's
growing on me, Chris.
It's jumping the like something about the Stone performances are really like crossing the line 37 times for me. Like the help me help you was so stupid the first time, and then he said it like 9 more times, and by the end of it, like he's saying it in like increasingly incoherent ways.
It's
help
the...
me help. You like
I think he gets the script and he goes, how can I put emphasis on a different word?
Yeah, no. It's funny.
He's a decent performer, but it's like I am so tired of the whoever he manages ends up just effing him over all the time and just like throw, you know, him being like dime store, thrift store. Seth Rollins with the women's clothing and stuff too. I'm just like, okay, I get it. But I think for me, what's making it is Von Wagner and his existential crisis.
there's a lot of good stuff. I mean, the hyper meta commentary of Robert Stone being like, I've known you for 3 years and I don't know you at all. Still continues to be really funny to me. What we see on TV is literally the depth of their interactions.
That said, I watch whatever I watch now on mute, so I don't know what a lot of people say because I just can't stand Booker T. I just cannot. They told him to have energy, and now he's just out of control.
And Vic even brought attention to it this week on commentary where he was like, sometimes you're a bit of a wild card, Booker T, something like that. Just,
Vic has a sneaky, sarcastic sense of humor.
Yes.
I like that.
He's cutting with a smile. Like, he there's a smile in his voice as he says something very cutting. It's funny.
Speaking of bad promos, Wardlow. Now, let me get the good out of the way. I saw what they were doing. It felt like Jim Ross was going, well, we need some sort of personal connection here in a feud. Maybe it's because of the death of Jerry Jarrett. I don't know. But there's a certain acting note I give about promos all the time, especially on the Dynamite show, less so here, because I don't think we talk as much about promos, because promos don't really exist for the most part, at least the type I want. But I believe I've said this on the show before, Chris. I go, half the problem with the promos of today is everybody thinks they can start neutral or in one emotion and then pivot to a second emotion without ever earning that second emotion. And that's what happened here. We are talking about the story of Wardlow's father. And Wardlow's father had cancer. And the day after he saw Wardlow wrestle, he died. If that's true, I'm very, very sorry for that. If that was for effect, it's a little much to say right after the day after he watched his son wrestle for the first time he died. But
has the Hulk Hogan saying that he body slammed Andre the Giant in the very next week he died sort of energy to it.
Yes. So Wardlow says he grew out his hair in this terrible man bun.
as a tribute to his father. He wanted to have the most Gen Z haircut possible for the last few years.
And that in the course of this 3-week team between Joe and Wardlow, when they were supposedly riding the roads together and having strategy meetings, that Wardlow is an oversharer of sorts and says that the reason he has this man bun is because of his father. And that when Joe cut it off, it was disrespectful. Because I guess Wardlow is Samson and Joe is his Delilah. And this is actually a love story of some sort. But I'm like, okay, you guys were a team for at most 2.5-3 weeks, I think. Maybe my math is wrong on that somewhat. And you're just deciding to give your deepest, darkest secrets as a trust bond? It's Samoa Joe. I just kind of went, this is your fault, you dope. But the fact that he's happy talking about his father, kind of smiling, and then all of a sudden gets the grr face. I give points for effort, but it just made this entire thing ridiculous in some ways, especially with Jim Ross just staring into the camera blankly.
Yeah, there's that. And there's the fact that we are now doing this Samoa Joe Wardlow thing again.
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 But this time, it's personal.
Right.
Joe Wardlow 5. This time, it's personal.
I am reminded, this is a very esoteric reference that probably only you'll get, but at the beginning of one of the episodes of Aqua Teen Hunger Force, the Dr. Weird segments.
Yes.
Dr. Weird proclaims in one of them right before he gets killed, this time will be different! And then he gets killed. And that's like what I hear every time. we're doing, you know, the Ass Boys versus the Acclaimed 3, or Wardlow and Samoa Joe 3, or Darby Allin and Samoa Joe 3.
Oh, by the way, there's no better way to build this personal feud between the Ass Boys and the Acclaimed than by adding two more teams into it.
I feel like it's really narratively going to satisfy everything that's been going on between them and their father.
Yeah. Just for the daddy issues of when Billy finally sides with them.
I guess. I mean, like, I don't know what the hell they're doing. It's all, like, this is a baffling.
I mean, there were baffling things on this AEW show, too. I mean, from people we expect better from. Now, let me, before I go into more criticism, let me praise the good. I love MJF. When MJF isn't trying to be funny, he's great. I loved this promo by him. What I did love was the interaction of Moxley and Hangman and the Dark Order.
Oh my God. But even the way that the Blackpool Combat Club handled the Los Ingobernables Stooges in the tag, like, I'm sorry, but Blackpool should have been out there to just annihilate MJF's henchmen. Like, yeah, Roosh and Preston Vance, I know they're supposed to be protected, whatever. No, they needed to pay a price for what they did last week. And Moxley, a former world champion, and Cassagnoli,
I forgot about the story about them locking Bryan Danielson in the trainer's room.
Boy, that's a damn shame, Jeff.
They should have recapped that, possibly.
Yep. No, and so, like, when I talk about, like, they do a crappy job telling stories, it's stuff like this. Like, the entire intensity of this match should have been level up. I'm sitting here and, like, you guys are having a cromulent match, but, like, you two should hate Roosh. You guys should absolutely be out here trying to make a statement, Chris, that if you send a henchman at us, we're killing you.
Chris, I do a show deconstructing Dynamite segment by segment, and I had forgotten about that entire thing. And you are, once again, coming out here hitting dingers about how people should be reacting in storyline. Yes, you're exactly. Why aren't they coming out here mad as hell about this whole thing? And
you want to know the term for the big problem on AEW is, like, the fancy college term. It's character verisimilitude. These characters do not act consistent with the way we understand them. John Moxley? You think John Moxley's not going to ratchet it up? You mess with one of his boys? Come on, he's John Moxley.
I think they were trying to tell the story that the blood was ratcheting it up, especially given the two past Moxley Preston Vance matches. But two things. Number one, this wasn't a blood feud because they didn't build it up that way in some ways, in terms of the match, in terms of the actual match. I mean,
no, like, I want Blackpool out there trying to hurt these guys. Not like,
but I
want to
hear that they're going to hurt them before they come out there and do it too. Yeah.
We're sending Preston Vance to the hospital tonight. Yes. And then you stretch them out.
Yeah. But also tell me the stories. Last week, these two did this in this thing. Give me the recap. And then it's like, Blackpool Combat Club. Look, this ain't going to be a wrestling match. We're going out to hurt these two. And then they go out there and do that. That's what I want. Be a little bit more obvious about it, as opposed to I'm going to get people who are saying, no, they're telling that story by showing you. It's like, they're not really showing me that. They're showing me a match right now where Moxley just decided to blade for no good reason.
Hey, do you remember? But wait, hold on. Do you remember that really great interaction between Danielson and the Blackpool Combat Club last week backstage?
No.
Yeah, because it didn't happen. Because they don't do that. Because Danielson has no friends. He's being booked the way that people have always criticized WWE, where the baby faces have no friends. And his buddies in the Blackpool Combat Club are on, like, some weird B-plot right now. Whereas they should be backstage closing in the ranks and saying, we are all going to put our bodies on the line to get Danielson to his title match.
Or Danielson should be firing them up to go out to this match. And say, these guys hurt me. We are a combat club. We are a club. We are a faction. Those guys need to get got. You know, that kind of thing. I'm just, and Preston Vance, God bless him, he tries, but he was outclassed by the other three guys in this match. And I think Jose gigged him a little too deep, and he got scared by the amount of blood he was bleeding at that time.
Yeah, I just I get frustrated with the story here, because it could be a really compelling story of Blackpool becoming a really ascendant babyface faction, even in the Danielson loss, where, like, you just, they become like the Four Horsemen, where you got Moxley, got Cassagnoli, you've got Yuta as the young one, and you got Danielson, and they're like a babyface version of the Horsemen, where you just don't step to Blackpool business, otherwise you get the treatment.
Yeah, I agree with that. But
could have been a great vehicle for that.
Yeah, and then, you know, trying to make the Dark Order a little serious here too, where it's like, I wish Adam Page would show me something in promos.
I also don't need Paige in the storyline right now because I need the Blackpool guys closing ranks around their dude who's going for the title rather than being worried about feuding with Adam Page for the third time.
For the third time, no.
For the third time is not the charm, Tony.
Why it's is not. And that's the other question here is why is Danielson the wild card and not Moxley? Why is Mox not just coming out on his own to face Page as opposed to with Claudio and Yuta? And then Claudio and Yuta be with Danielson trying to close. Yeah, nothing about this makes sense in the linear storytelling.
No, there's no character verisimilitude. Like the way the Blackpool guys are acting right now is not consistent. And I would say that Blackpool could have definitely been more thoroughly fleshed out before the loss of Regal. But like, they're just not acting in consistent ways, and it's a big turnoff.
Yeah, it's your go, even though we've both been talking.
Yeah, no, I know. Look, I will say, even though it like had no real stakes, Mark Briscoe and Josh Woods was a fine thing. And I mean, look, I think.
Oh, I forgot to mention in the news, Mark Briscoe is now All Elite.
Nice. Good for him. And I think he's a really interesting feud for MJF after the Danielson feud completes. I also don't think he should ever lose. Like, he should always be one half of the tag team champions forever. Like, that actually should be part of his gimmick.
Okay, somebody brought this up on the Dynamite show, and I want your opinion of it. Should they retire the ROH tag team titles?
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
Yes.
You were quick on that. I didn't even finish the question, but okay. Yes. And just maybe have like a tournament once a year for tag team supremacy, and they're called the Jay Briscoe tournament or whatever.
Yep. You have an annual trophy or whatever, but like they are the champions forever. Yep.
Okay. Wow.
No, this is a company. I mean, like, the Briscoes gave so much to this company, and they're so synonymous to this company that I actually think it would be. And also, let's keep it real. What's the outlook for this company too? I think at this point, it's time to go like, okay, as we are finishing up the story of ROH, what do we want this story to say? And I think the Briscoes are a really great vehicle to move that story through. So I would make Mark for, I mean, like, one, I would never turn him heel ever again. Like, he's babyface forever. And the other, I would make his gimmick would essentially be one half of the tag team champions.
Yeah. It was weird. Even when he was a heel, he wasn't really a heel because he was kind of the goofy one. Whereas Jay, you know, even in the Briscoe versus Briscoe feud, he wasn't the heel in it. That was Jay. So Jay gave off more menace back in the day. But yeah, I do want to give, just because we already praised SmackDown earlier, but I had this written down too. I loved that Braun Strowman and Ricochet versus the Usos match.
That was fun.
Braun Strowman and Ricochet are a fun team. I know Braun has his issues on social media and stuff like that, but
I like to call them the Control Your Narrative boys.
Ricochet and Braun? Why is Ricochet a Control Your Narrative?
Ricochet was a pretty bad COVID offender, if you recall. Uh-huh. Throwing like COVID parties during, like, remember, like, yes, in the prior to the vaccine even being out, throwing COVID parties and getting people COVID. Like, there were definitely, there were incidences because of Ricochet.
I know we bypassed Raw a little bit, but this is just another quick hit. How ridiculous is Rick Boogs both looking and acting right now?
Dude, it's like, what the hell is this iteration of him?
Everything charming about him is gone.
I know. God. It's his makeover's as bad as Kip Sabian's makeover has been.
He looks like he's ate the other Rick Boogs, too. He should add a third O to his name. He's gotten so much bigger, and I don't know if he naturally got that much bigger. Let me be a jerk and throw that out there.
Yeah, and I don't think it adds anything to the act is the worst part. It's like he just looks older.
Yes.
He was much more interesting as the guitar guy.
For Nakamura, and, yeah.
Yeah, right. That was clearly the right answer. If Riddle was around, he seems like a tailor-made friend for Riddle too. So I don't know who thought that this repackaging of Boogs was going to be good. I don't really care so much that he's beating The Miz, but I'm kind of like, why? Yeah. It's not like you need to protect The Miz, but I'm like, why is he beating The Miz?
Yeah. What is the upside? What is the feud we're building him for? If Miz is the stepping stone, because we've taken away his guitar, so it's not Elias again.
Right, but he still does air guitar.
Oh, okay, maybe. Maybe it's another Elias feud.
Yeah, no, right. Like, there's still this implication of, like, this Rick Boogs still likes rock. He still likes to rock. He's just, like, not a guitar player.
It's like somebody watched an episode of SmackDown and decided to take the bad parts of the Boogs act and amplify them on Raw. That's what it is to me. I don't know. You got anything else on your list?
I the main event here. I just like this WWE versus AEW women's division angle is not good.
Oh, it stinks.
It's the part at the end.
Ruby's choice.
Ruby's choice is
stinks.
It's so bad. But like when you have Saraya and then Jamie Hayter, and like Hayter's like holding up the belt, and me as the viewer can't even infer what either one of them would be saying to Ruby Soho at this point to even compel her.
She had WWE script notes, I guarantee it, or style, because it's like, okay, so Toni Storm and Saraya come down and they pull out a local indie worker to basically do the whole, they're beating up a fan. Look at that. Look how terrible that is. And then Ruby comes out walking, looking worried, just kind of looks at them beating up a fan. And it's like, oh, maybe I should go stop that. I'm just like, this whole conflicted morality thing, especially for Ruby, is terrible.
No, and especially because they sort of like tip the hand when she does the I want the belt thing at the end of the match. She was gesturing that she wanted a shot at Hayter's title, so this all feels pretty academic.
Boy, does this feel like they're gonna do a third faction of some sort with her and Sheeta?
Oh God,
that's what it feels like. It feels like,
no,
it's gonna
I
be
know.
Like a six woman three way, and I'm just like, oh God, it's not gonna be blood and guts anymore. It's gonna be Toni and Saraya versus Sheeta and Ruby versus Jamie and Britt. And that just sounds dreadful to me. I don't know. I am not loving this story. I'm not liking the cutesy parts. Again, I'll bring it up. Spray painting Tony's butt to then imprint it on Britt. I'm just like,
that was horrible. That went so badly. It was embarrassing how bad that execution on that spot was, and even commentary couldn't sit there and like kayfabe it into reality. They had to go like, well, you know, she probably got a lot of that.
Can we just say that the big loser here is Britt Baker, who is their one real star other than maybe Jade, who was on one of the dark shows this week.
I feel like the big loser here is Toni Storm. Like, Toni Storm has been criminally misused since she's came to this company.
She's been misused in every company, but I don't look. Is it because she can't promo, or is it just because?
I think it's politics, dude.
Do you?
Yeah, like, because I think that this women's division, see this Thunder Rosa story earlier today, is just really political.
Okay, no, I can buy that. I can buy that too.
I'm just like thinking about all the various stories. Like, I can't recall them all right now because,
like, maybe if you book Toni Storm as an ass kicker that she is, then maybe she gets over someone. But they're just doing these.
Maybe if you didn't make
angles.
Her the interim champion and then retroactively make her a real champion after she lost the title.
Yeah, I get it. I think everybody's being criminally misused. But again, I have a theory, and that is that Tony Khan can buy ingredients. He's just not really good at cooking, and I think he needs some help. And I don't think he has the guys around him to help him. He has people from the other company who needed jobs, for the most part. And I think, and
none of them
want to
write a TV show. Like, Tony wants to own a wrestling company,
right?
Some of these other VPs and stuff like want to have 5-star matches. Like, they want to do well on the Meltzer ratings.
Yeah. Oh God, that NBA tie-in with the Elite and the Hardy fam or whatever the hell this Stokely, Ethan, Matt Hardy private party crap is. It makes the Elite look dumb too. Kenny obviously doesn't watch the Association. So it's one of those, I mean, And the ego Matt Hardy comedy bickering thing, which has been done 80 million times now. Nobody came out good in that segment either, but please continue with your five-star match thing. I'm sorry.
No one wants to write a good television show. No one wants to be like, none of the people that Tony Khan has as employ want to be like the next Jado or Ghetto, like in their peak eras, telling like these like complicated stories through the G1, through matches, and mostly through matches with a little bit of promos. No one's trying to write like that. And this is a TV show without writers. You got actors, you got a director, and like no one's writing the thing.
We'll just roll tape and see what happens.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like it's the monkeys locked in a room with a typewriter sort of approach of, well, if we just do enough of it, something will be good.
Or even better, the jam band theory. We'll eventually find a solo in here. If we keep playing long enough.
Right. Right. If only television shows could be edited, live television shows could be edited the way they used to edit 70s studio rock, where, you know, they'd go in and jam a track for 10 minutes and then edit down to 3 and put some vocals over it, and that's your track.
Yeah. No, yeah. I agree. I don't have anything else to talk about. You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
This has been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me at CrapGame13 on the Twitterverse. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. I do a show on another Patreon, patreon.com/FightGameMedia for $5 a week. Wednesdays, I do the Dynamite show with Paul Fontaine. We thoroughly deconstruct every single segment of Dynamite in addition to talking the news and events of Dynamite. That's patreon.com/FightGameMedia. Lots of shows there. We are a proud member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Shows for every type of fandom here as well. Open the Voice Gate, five-star match game, Music of the Mat, and of course the flagship with Rich and Joe. Chris is a guitar teacher and is becoming a Instagram celebrity of sorts, I would guess, in the Albuquerque area, and also engaging in the, are you in the Chinese spyware TikTok yet?
Not yet, but it's unfortunately coming every time I try to bring up my concerns about safety and privacy, everyone acts like I'm crazy, Jeff.
The kids are on it, Chris. You got to go on it. But you can follow him on Instagram at Dr. Nov, DOCTOR_NOV. I'll let Chris plug his lessons and any other money-making ventures he has right now.
Yeah, you want guitar lessons, people? How about bass lessons? How about drum lessons? Okay, how about vocal lessons? Okay, how about piano lessons? Come on, how about just like songwriting lessons? Something, anything, please. Go to my Instagram account and message me, Dr. DOCTOR_Nov. You can get the Shake Them Ropes discount if you message me for guitar lessons. What is it? It's mysterious.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.